Hello and welcome to the Grover Beach City Council meeting of October 10th, 2023. We appreciate y'all being here. We'll call this meeting to order. This meeting may also be viewed on Channel 20 and is available on live streaming on the city's website and on slow-span.org. Members of the public may provide public comment during the meeting by attending the meeting or calling 805-321-6639. The phone line is now open. If you would please stand with me for a moment of silence for all the folks that are involved in this terrible incident in Israel and Palestine. Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that. Okay. We're going to move on to the flag salute, which is one of our favorite items of our meetings. In this, tonight, our flag salute will be presented by Seth Bender. Seth is 11 years old and a sixth grade student at Grover Beach Elementary School. He enjoys math, geometry, writing, reading, and science in school. He likes the challenge of math and geometry, the creativity of writing, and the surprise of science. And he feels reading is just one of those things you can't explain, but he still just loves it. He enjoys living on the Central Coast because the view of the coast is nice, and he likes its kind of beaches. He also feels that people are really nice, and he loves the weather. Me too. James is interested in studying aerodynamics, engineering, algebra, physics, and geometry in high school and college because he would like to become an aircraft engineer when he is older. Outside of school, James says he's interested in having a hobby of being a comedian, and he might also try to be a musician or even an actor if he isn't taken by the CGI in the future. James, if you would come up, please.
He's a writer.
And tonight, James is accompanied by his father, Tyler Bender. Whenever you're ready.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Very good, thank you. So if you just want to come over here, we're going to have to have your picture taken.
Get to have you all done.
Especially he's ready for the spotlight.
Yeah, he's looking at the microphones.
Here we go. Here is a certificate of appreciation. You'd like to hold that for your picture. Very good. And then one more. Thank you. Thank you so much. Here's your bag of stuff.
Thank you.
We really appreciate you being here. Maybe I'll see you next time. Oh, no. It's in a couple days. Thank you. Bye. Okay. At this time, the City Council will review the order of business to be conducted and receive requests for or make announcements regarding any changes in the order of the day.
Mayor,
yes.
Would you like to do roll call first?
Oh, I think I would. Thank you.
Councilmember Rushing.
Here.
Councilmember Weirich.
Here.
Councilmember Zimmerman.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Robert.
Here.
Mayor Bright.
Here. Thank you. Okay, now we'll move on to agenda review. Yes, we will. Sorry. Okay. Closed session announcements. City Hall. I mean, City Attorney Hale. Good lordy.
The heat. We have nothing this evening.
Thank you. My word. All right, then. Sorry, folks. We'll get into the swing of things here pretty soon. Okay. So now we're at agenda review. Do any council members have any questions or changes?
No.
To the agenda item? Okay, very good. Then if someone would please make a motion.
Move that we accept the agenda as presented.
I'll second it.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. None opposed? Thank you. We have a consensus. Okay, now we'll move on to the ceremonial calendar. The first item on our agenda is the ceremonial calendar, the ceremonial proclamation for Fire Prevention Week. And I've asked our council member Rushing to read that for us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is a proclamation of the City of Grover Beach City Council declaring October 8th through 14th, 2023 as National Fire Prevention Week. Whereas the City of Grover Beach, California is committed to ensuring the safety and security of all those living in and visiting our city. And whereas fire is a serious public safety concern both locally and nationally, and homes are and the locations where people are at greatest risk from fire. And whereas Fire Prevention Week is observed each year during the week of October 8th in commemoration of the Great Chicago Fire, which began on October 8th, 1871, causing devastation, damage, and great loss. Whereas the 2023 Fire Prevention Week campaign theme is Cooking Safety Starts With You. Grover Beach is reminded to pay attention to fire prevention and works to educate everyone about simple but important actions they can take to keep themselves and those around them safe while cooking. Whereas cooking fires are the leading cause of home fires and home fire injuries, unattended cooking is the leading cause of cooking fires and deaths. Whereas Grover Beach first responders are dedicated to reducing the occurrences of home fires and home fire injuries through prevention and protection education. And whereas Grover Beach residents that are responsive to public education measures are better able to take personal steps to increase their safety from fire, especially in their homes. And now, therefore, be it resolved that the City of Grover Beach City Council does hereby proclaim October 8th through 14th, 2023, as Fire Prevention Week throughout the City of Grover Beach.
Thank you. And I believe that we have our fire members of our fire department here to accept this proclamation, and would you care to come and say a few words? Yes, please. Thank you.
So, thank you. We appreciate every year having the proclamation for Fire Prevention. We tend to say month now for the month of October just because there's so many events that take place. A couple things that I would like to point out just for this month. We do have on Thursday, we continue to support the Lisa Ann Rouge Byrne Foundation that is typically a tour of the county that starts early in the morning and runs through the county to all the schools, and that will happen again on Thursday. We start down here, and they do it in North County, I believe, concurrently. They end the day at the Farmers Market in San Luis Obispo that evening, which is Farmers Market. The theme for that is Fire Prevention Week as well, and it goes typically until the close of Farmers Market at 9 o'clock. So it's a very long day. For the people involved, a lot of involvement. We're very proud that Captain Leathers has been a part of that for many years, as other personnel have. But Captain Leathers most recently has essentially chaired that event, put everything together, done a lot of planning, ahead of time, and then a long day for him. And his daughter has actually been helping him for years as well. So I wanted to point that out. And then October 21st for the Five Cities Fire Authority at the Station 1 in Arroyo Grande will be the open house from 10 to 12, and we'll have an auto extrication demonstration as well as some fire prevention information to share with the people that attend. We'll be serving hot dogs and popcorn for that as well. So wanted to thank you all for the proclamation.
Thank you very much. So would you all care to come up and we'll have a photo?
And there is your proclamation. Thank you so much. So, all you do.
Can you get our hands for that?
Thank you.
Really appreciate all your
questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. See you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have no presentations this evening, so we'll move on to public.
One more.
One more? Oh, of course we do. Oh, my goodness. I am so sorry. I'm just not on it. So, yes. Oh, my word. This is a proclamation for Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And I will be reading this proclamation. It is something that's a bit near and dear to me because of incidents in my family. But in either case, let me read this, please. Proclamation of the Grover Beach City Council declaring October as Dating and Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Whereas Dating and Domestic Violence Awareness Month calls attention to the fact that intimate partner violence is widespread and impacts every person in Grover Beach. And whereas Lumina Alliance provide essential life-saving services for survivors, their children, and families throughout San Luis Obispo County, including Grover Beach, and whereas domestic violence is a pattern of control in an intimate relationship where one person uses coercion and violence to gain power and control over his or her partner, and whereas domestic violence can result in physical injury, psychological trauma, and even death, the devastating consequences of domestic violence can cross generations and can last a lifetime. And whereas there is a need to focus on the individualized needs of domestic violence survivors, and whereas the marginalization of certain groups in society, including undocumented individuals, transgender individuals, and those living with disabilities, increases their vulnerability to intimate partner violence. And whereas Lumina Alliance continues to provide a safe environment to those affected by domestic violence with crisis intervention, counseling, education, legal services, and emergency safe housing with the help of dedicated volunteers and professionals. And whereas Lumina Alliance has received over 2,000 calls to the Crisis and Information Line, provided more than 6,000 collective nights for shelter clients, and provided more than 4,800 hours of therapy. And whereas Lumina Alliance serves as a bright light during dark times for survivors of intimate partner violence, illuminating a path towards safety and healing. Now, therefore, it be resolved that the Grover Beach City Council, in recognition of the important work done by domestic violence programs, does hereby proclaim October 2023 to be National Dating and Domestic Violence Awareness Month. This will be accepted by Lumina Alliance. Jane Pomeroy. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Jane Pomeroy. I am the Chief Communications Officer with Lumina Alliance, formerly Rise and Stand Strong. Lumina Alliance's mission is to empower those impacted by sexual and intimate partner violence through innovative advocacy, healing, and prevention programs. Our agency, though we've changed names, has supported survivors for over 40 years, and we continue to serve as a bright light during dark times for those in need. We offer a 24-hour crisis and information line, self-sufficiency services, legal referrals, accompaniment and advocacy, emergency shelters, transitional housing, individual and group therapy, and a robust prevention program. As previously mentioned, October is Dating and Domestic Violence Awareness Month, or DVAM, and it was launched in 1987 with the goal of uniting organizations and people working to end domestic and intimate partner violence across the country. Over 30 years later, DVAM continues to be a time for collaboration, advocacy, and connection with the goal of raising awareness about the impacts of violence locally and nationwide. This year in particular, we look to shine a light on the hidden costs of intimate partner violence in our community, as well as those whose survivorship often go unacknowledged. These groups are often the least likely to have access to the services they need to heal and thrive, and the violence they experience is often in the shadows. This October, we're committed to illuminating the paths to a brighter future for all survivors. In honor of DVAM, Lumina Alliance has planned several events throughout the month, including the Celebrate Community Festival and Walk for Survivors on Saturday, October 28th in Mission Plaza in San Luis Obispo. This family-friendly event brings together supporters throughout the county to walk in celebration of our vision to create a safe, thriving, and equitable community. Visit celebratecommunityslow.org to register for this event, or come visit our Slow Farmers Market booth on October 19th to learn more. Lumen Alliance will also be hosting a session of A Window Between Worlds, which is a transformative healing arts program facilitated by Lumina Alliance staff. Finally, tune into KCBX this month to hear stories from local Spanish-speaking survivors about their experiences with violence and seeking help in our community. Visit luminaalliance.org/DVAM-2023 to learn more about these events and how you can participate in DVAM. Please remember, if you or anyone you know is experiencing sexual or intimate partner violence and needs help, please call 805-545-8888 to speak to one of our confidential advocates. In closing, we're so grateful for this proclamation and your ongoing support. On behalf of Lumina Alliance's Board of Directors, staff, and volunteers, we thank all of you for taking action this month to create a safe, thriving, and equitable community.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being here. Would you come forward for a photograph? First, I want to thank you all for helping me get through this mess. I don't know what the deal is, but something isn't right. Anyway, hey?
It's team effort.
Appreciate it. Okay. We'll move on now. We have no presentations, so we'll move on to public communications. During this time, the council will allow public communications. Any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of the council. Council will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council may not act on items not on the agenda. I have a speaker slip here for something that's not on the agenda. Stacy Korsgaden, would you care to come forward?
Hello, my name is Stacy Korsgaden from Grover Beach. As our council, you make decisions for us, the community, and it is a big responsibility, one that we expect to be honest, legal, and positive for those that you serve. We might have differences of opinion and different recommended solutions, but we as a community appreciate the attributes of good governance to stem from good ethics and sound judgment. I truly believe that the Grover Council members care deeply about our community, and I appreciate all that you do, all the time and efforts to keep our town strong. I come to you before today to discuss, because Grover Beach, I feel, is at a fork in the road regarding the Oceano Dunes and the use of the park by vehicles. We are at the fork in the road, and I ask you to put on your agenda in the future and publicly vote on how each of you would like to proceed. This fork in the road comes when we find the truth. If we continue down the same road, we do not acknowledge the truth that has been recently discovered. And what is that? It's been scientifically proven that the so-called 100% dust filled with poisonous PM10 silica was nothing but a ghost. It was false. Was this an error or a lie to fulfill an agenda? This is something that I just don't know. What I do know is that we have not heard an apology, taking responsibility for the error that pitted neighbor against neighbor. It's been a waste. These false death claims panic citizens up on the mesa, falsely blaming riders for something that never existed. It was a relief to hear from Ms. Russell from Scripps proving that all of this was false. I had hoped that it would be blasted in the papers, radio, and TV, and our leaders would be wildly excited to fully open up our OHV riding, but this has not happened. Do we continue down the old path? This is why so many are disappointed and dissatisfied with government as a whole. You here have an opportunity to go down a different path. As chair of the APCD board, it will take strength and courage. There are several on the APCD board that I know exert great pressure. I am sure, but you will be appreciated by millions. First, I recommend an apology to our community that we have spent over $25 million on these false claims. This could have been used to lower debt, reduce expenses, fees, and prepared for unexpected emergencies. Second, I ask for our council to publicly and fully support the Oceano Dunes. Many in California want to enjoy its treasures. This is a one-of-a-kind, world-class experience that brings life to Grover Beach. Like a river brings life to a lake, the dunes feeds the community, businesses, and families in the way of jobs, joy of nature, and fun. Please take the honest road, correct the errors of the past, and lead us to prosperity.
Thank you. That's fine. Have we anyone on the line?
No, we do not.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, we'll move on to the consent agenda. So I find my notes here. There we go. The following routine items are listed here are scheduled for consideration as a group. Members of the audience may speak on any item listed on the consent agenda. Any council member, city attorney, city manager may request that an item be withdrawn from the consent agenda to allow for full discussion. Items withdrawn from the consent agenda will be heard after the rest of the consent agenda is approved. So we have on this consent agenda, item 3, minutes of the City Council meeting Monday, September 25th, City Council meeting schedule for calendar year 2024, item 5, West Grand Avenue streetscape project bid rejection. Any questions, concerns? Yes, sir.
I would want to pull item 4 as far as the meeting schedule calendar.
Okay. All right, then. So we'll pull item 4 for a brief discussion. Okay. So I would entertain a motion on items 3 and 5, if anybody's so inclined.
I can move that we adopt the consent agenda items 3 and 5 as presented tonight.
A second.
You. Very good. So we have a motion and a second. These all call for a voice vote. So all in favor, say aye.
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 None opposed? Okay. So now we'll bring it back to item 4, the City Council meeting schedule for the calendar year 2024. And Councilmember Wyrick?
Yeah, next year is kind of a unique year as far as how many holidays appear on the same Mondays as our normal council meetings. So there's 4 of them. However, there's 2 of them that potentially we could actually probably reschedule on a Monday because there's the 5th Monday preceding it. So there won't be 2 weeks of City Council meetings back-to-back. So I wanted to address those 2 in particular. Because I think it's best if we keep our meetings on Mondays in general, especially from our experience earlier this year with the Five Seas Fire Authority, that there was decisions that sometimes had to be made even the same week with the Rio Grande City Council, which usually meets on the Tuesdays with us. So on the calendar, when you look at it, Tuesday, February 13th, Tuesday, May 28th, Tuesday, October 15th, and Tuesday, November 12th are the ones that appear. The ones I'm looking at are February and October. Now, October itself might be relieved depending on if we maintain in our city calendar this holiday that currently exists. If that goes away too, then obviously we would default back to the 14th, I would assume. But on February 13th, if we move it to Monday, February 5th, that still leaves an entire week between our second council meeting in January, because then there's the 5th Monday on the 29th. Then February 5th. So, there's no back-to-back weeks with city council meetings, and it's a simple change. So that's what I'm recommending, that for those 2 Mondays in particular, and for those 2 Tuesdays in particular, that we could readjust them. As far as May and November, I don't have any solutions, because any moving them to Monday nights would result in 1 week having a city council meeting, the next week having a city council meeting.
Okay. Thank you. I understand. Any questions here?
No questions, comments.
Okay, I'm just going to take it to staff and see if there's any questions or comments there.
Thank you, Mayor. Staff has no issues with the proposed changes, as mentioned by Mr. Wyrick.
Okay, very good. Yes, sir.
I don't necessarily have an issue with it. My only thought is that we have our meetings when we have meetings on specific weeks of the month, and it's a fairly long-standing tradition that if there's a holiday, that it gets pushed to the next day. In order to avoid potential confusion, I would recommend keeping it to the second and fourth Mondays and or Tuesdays of the month.
Okay. Any other comment here?
No.
I don't feel strongly either way. I see both ways about it. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
What about what? And you, ma'am?
Well, when I looked at the calendar, I noted that I was available on all of those days. I didn't look to see if we were to change it to another day, so I can't say. I know that I am available for all of those days at this point in time. So, I'm good with whatever. Whatever. I don't know if. Have you had a chance to check your calendar?
I'm good.
Okay. You're good for Tuesdays as well?
Yeah, as well.
And as the proposed changes?
I'm good either way.
Okay.
Yeah. I do see Councilmember Rushing's point to skip a meeting and go 3 weeks out, or what is that? Yeah, to the following Monday. I see his point too, but I think keeping it close to the week that we're doing the businesses.
Okay.
It's probably a good idea.
Okay. Well, I guess we need a motion, yeah. And then we can go from there. So.
And I guess all I would throw out is, in general, I would say Mondays are more preferable to me than seconds and fourth, but again, not feeling strongly either way, and maybe we try that with the February schedule and see if it jumbles up other things that are in typical patterns, or if staff maybe takes another look at this and has a feeling one way or another, then maybe we look at it again. But I think it's wise to bring it for consideration. And
and of course, Mayor, we could always just delay this too. I mean, I don't see a real urgency right now, especially
yes.
If people check their calendars.
And that's where I'm headed with this.
I just had one other comment, and I'm totally fine delaying if we need to as well. The fact that if we consider changing the weeks, it wouldn't be consistent throughout the course of the entire year at the same time, too, that it wouldn't be the rule necessarily, no matter what, if there's a Monday holiday, that we move it to a different week or move to the next Tuesday. It just seems to me to cause a little bit more confusion than necessary.
And maybe I'll just re-clarify, from my experience on the council this year is, like I said, the Five Cities Fire Authority highlighted that there was times where we'd be making decisions, stuff at Rio Grande, our same week. So us on a Monday, them on a Tuesday. And those situations, we're joined with them, in multiple ways too. Central Coast Blue, Five Cities Fire Authority, Sanitation District. And these things could come up in different ways too, where to have us both on the same nights too, if such an item that were timely did come up, it presents kind of a potential logistical difficulty. That's why I was hoping to avoid Tuesdays whenever possible, especially since, like I said, the ones I'm looking at don't run into the issue of back weeks on council meetings. So that was the primary area. Yeah, for my schedule, I make it work regardless. Yeah, that's not the issue.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Well, I think if this council is in agreement, we will table this for
absolutely.
A next meeting so folks can check their calendars and see if, in fact, this is something that we would like to do.
Certainly. We can do that with the idea that we would bring this back at the next council meeting so we could enact this before 2024. I guess one point staff would raise is with a concern around the conflict with Rio Grande's schedule, we could also just make sure that we don't have anything going forward in that potential conflict date that would overlap in both communities. And with enough proper pre-planning, we could probably avoid that from happening. But yes, we will bring back the calendar at the next meeting, look at some fine-tuning, and bring it back for council approval.
Very good. Okay. Well, thank you very much. Thank you all. Okay. Very good. Now we'll move on then to the public hearing, and that's item 6, which is the second reading And public hearing to adopt an ordinance repealing and replacing Chapter 3 of Article 3, Traffic Regulations, of the Grover Beach Municipal Code. And I believe Chief Peters is... Oh, there you are. Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and members of the council and community. Tonight, we are bringing the second reading and public hearing of the proposed traffic regulations to you. The traffic ordinance the one that we have currently in place was adopted in 1960, so it's a little dated. It has been updated over the years, but a lot of the material that's in that ordinance is actually already covered by state laws and legislation, so it's pretty repetitive. And if you've ever read the ordinance, it's in excess of 45 pages, so it can be cumbersome to understand at times. So staff has, for multiple departments, worked on the repealing and replacing in its entirety Article 3, Chapter 3, and then bringing you a new ordinance that would just be fresh and clean and up to date. The new ordinance will provide better clarity and update the following regulations, more clearly defining a 72-hour parking regulation, provide provisions for regarding the storage of semi-trailers on city right-of-ways, also provide guidelines for storing of dumpsters, storage containers, and other construction equipment on city roadways, establishing a recreational vehicle permit and parking program, and eliminating the current traffic committee. The first reading was conducted on September 25th here at the council chambers. And during the first reading, we had some public comment that asked a few questions. We were able to address those questions in the staff report, but we'll go over them again here tonight so that the community knows. One of the questions was, what was the distance requirement, or was the distance requirement in the 72-hour parking provision necessary? The next question was, would it be illegal to park a vehicle on the city right-of-way while advertising it for sale? And then the third question was, how many RV permits could be issued to a Grover Beach residents under the RV permitting and parking program? So to go over the 72-hour section, this is actually covered under the new sections of 3308 and 3313. As the current ordinance, we also enforce a 72-hour parking regulation. The enforcement of this regulation is about 99% of it is complaint-driven. We don't have officers going around the city looking for vehicles that have been parked over 48 hours or 72 hours. That's just not what we do. We do have community service technicians that go around the city looking for obviously abandoned vehicles, vehicles that still have, you know, grass growing up underneath them or obviously have not been moved in quite a while. So that is the proactive approach to it. But the 72-hour parking program, like I said, about 99% of the time, it's complaint-based, and somebody has called in to complain about somebody parking a vehicle there for a long time. This also is a requirement in this new provision that would require the vehicle, once it's been noticed, and just give you, to back up just a little bit and give you a little bit of thought process on how this happens. A complaint comes into our dispatch center. The officer then goes out to the vehicle, runs the license plate, tries to identify the owner of the vehicle. If the owner actually lives in the neighborhood, they'll try to make contact with the owner of the vehicle and say, hey, we received a complaint about your car being parked here. You may want to reach out to your neighbors and let them know it's yours, or move it every once in a while and so it's not in violation of the ordinance. If there is no contact made, then the officer puts a fluorescent colored decal on the window so it stands out, and it gives the owner notification that within 72 hours that we will come back after that 72nd hour and check to see if the vehicle has been moved. The officer does mark the vehicle tire with the chalk in on the roadway surface that helps to determine if it was moved. And then after they check the vehicle, if it hasn't been moved, the vehicle can be towed off of the roadway. Most of the times when we sticker a vehicle, it's moved. When the officer goes out or the community service technician goes out, 3 or 4 days later, it's not there. So the complaint has been resolved at that point. The other reason why we have a moving requirement in this particular case to be moved 1/10 of a mile away is because of roadway maintenance. We obviously have invested a lot in our roadways, putting them, you know, paving them in the residential zones. Pavement management, you don't want a vehicle parking in the roadway if it's vehicles, especially if it's dripping any fluids or if it's allowing debris to pile up underneath it and grass and so forth to grow through the pavement. Obviously, that helps to destroy the pavement and doesn't last as long as we've intended. And then, in reality, the street sweepers can't go down and they go around the vehicles. I'm sure you've seen it in many neighborhoods where the street sweeper has gone around vehicles that were there at the time of street sweeping. So that's the reason why that we've asked for the distance, significant distance, to be moved, so that we know that that 72-hour period has been applied and conformed to. In reference to parking vehicles for sale or for advertisement on city streets, this is a something that's not in our ordinance right now, but during the staff review of what we thought was necessary to put into the ordinance, this was one of the items that came up. In particular, it is this would make a parking violation if people park their vehicles on city right away, advertising them for sale, basically conducting private business on city property. And this would also eliminate allow us to take enforcement action on mobile advertisements. So if you have vehicles that are parked there that have big mobile billboards or signs in the back that are the whole sole purpose for parking a vehicle in the roadway was to do some advertising, commercial advertisement, but it's on, again, city property, city right of way. So the problem that we have seen is what these signs cause through distracted driving. Oftentimes, the driver that's going by may show some interest in a motor vehicle that's for sale. And in particular, we've seen this on Oak Park Boulevard, North Oak Park Boulevard, in front of the church quite a bit. People all of a sudden slow down. They're trying to get a look at the car. They're trying to get maybe a photograph of the for sale sign to get a number. And instead of passing and pulling over, they're hitting the brakes and causing some traffic congestion. That, unfortunately, can cause an accident. And when we have a traffic collision because of distracted driving for something that was preventable, that's what we're trying to do. As the council adopted the Vision Zero several years ago, and that was to prevent a serious injury and fatality traffic collisions. This would also help with eliminating neighborhood discontent. Sometimes when vehicles are parked in the neighborhood, you do have a passerby that stops and parks right next to the vehicle, almost double parking, gets out, tries to look at the vehicle, which they're parked then illegally in there, and some of the neighbors just do not like that. And so we end up getting a lot of calls when there's for sale signs on vehicles in residential zones. And right now there is no enforcement arm in our current regulations, so this would help us to address what has been brought to our attention multiple times. So tonight, we're looking to conduct the second reading and the public hearing, as we are today, with the full repealing and replacing of Article 3 of the traffic regulations and adopting the new regulations. And at this time, I will open it up for questions.
Very good. Thank you very much. Any questions? We'll start
I can start.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Chief, for that presentation and great summary. I think one that kind of gives me a little bit of pause is similar to some of the public comment that we heard last week, which was a concern about that distance increase on the 72-hour thing. And I think that the main thing that comes to mind to me is a lot of our high-density neighbors, and a lot of them don't have off-street parking options. And if they're, you know, hoping to get their same spot back on their street every night, and they're, you know, driving to and from work and honestly commuting every day, and then all of a sudden maybe they have a, you know, an upset neighbor or parking's tight on their block or something like that, and their car gets flagged as if it hasn't moved, and then they're forced to park a block away, and this kind of ongoing situation develops, I just wonder, you know, kind of, are we opening up a can of worms here? And I guess from my perspective, I'm not sure that it's something that a step we need to take, and I think it might maybe create more problems than it solves. But that's just to kind of see the other side of that for consideration on the public sphere. So that would be my main one. And then I guess with the for sale signs, again, frankly not something I think of as a total nuisance around here, but maybe it's more than I'm realizing. I wonder if we could maybe explore like a 72-hour tag on those as well, you know, so somebody can't park their car for a week, but maybe if they want to list it for a couple of days, you know, I'm more open to that, and I could see that being more of a hazard as far as like slowing down traffic on Oak Park if people are parking right along a main thoroughfare. Of course, that's a hazardous situation. Those are kind of my main two thoughts in response to this. So, thank you.
Yes, on the for sale signs, there is a 24-hour regulation, so there is a warning posted on the vehicle for the first 24 hours.
Okay.
So
that sounds great then.
Our desire was that the officer, because there's a phone number, the community.
Yeah, that's right. They're not hiding. That makes sense.
The owner and say, you're in violation. We're posting it. You need to move it within 24 hours.
Sure. I like that. That's all for me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, actually, a follow up on the for sale. Did you mention that it was essentially a parking ticket for a violation on the for sale?
After the first 24 hours, if it's not moved, it can be cited.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Mayor Pro Tem, you have any questions?
On the for sale, you say if it's not moved, well, if you saw it moved somewhere else, it's still in violation, right?
Correct.
So if it's not, for sale sign is not removed from the car.
Correct.
It parked on public streets. Okay, just so they understand that. They don't move two blocks away and think they're okay, because then they'll get a ticket, right?
Yeah, the ordinance does have a provision in there that is it cannot be moved anywhere else in the city on public right-of-way.
Very good.
May I make just a clarifying question? However, you can have it on your own private property. In your driveway, you can have a for sale sign on it, and that's not an issue.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Wyrick.
All this makes sense to me, so I don't have any other issues. And the whole vehicle for sale park goes in a totally different direction of my thoughts than the traffic ordinance goes, so I don't need to share that for this item.
Thank you. So I just have a question, and that is because I have someone in my neighborhood who's very concerned about parking. What about everyday drivers? I mean, we have had this issue where somebody has their car, it's their everyday driver, and so once that car is marked, if they actually go to work or go to the market or whatever they do and come back and park in that same spot, how does that work, please?
Well, there's a couple of things that happen when there. So when the vehicle is marked, like I said, the tires are also chalked, and there's a line that's from the bottom of the tire to the roadway surface. So when the vehicle leaves and it returns, it would probably be really hard to get the lines to match back up.
Okay.
So when the officer goes out to inspect, that's one of the first things they're looking for. And if their tire obviously has moved, then they know that the vehicle has been at least in motion and that the 72-hour violation may not be applicable. But they're also going to be required to do some follow-up and to make sure that it just wasn't rolled 2 feet, 3 feet back.
Okay.
Because the whole focus is just try to solve whatever that neighborhood complaint is. And then if we can communicate with the owner of the vehicle and the complaining party and maybe even put the two of them in contact with each other, they would better understand what is actually occurring and that it's not an abandoned vehicle.
Very good. Thank you. Yes.
But to the ordinance and council members, Zimmerman's concern is that they need to move quite a distance away and it's not move the tire mark.
Yes.
So that's a problem. That I can see that as a problem. Someone goes to work every day in the same vehicle and is there in the same spot every day. And you tag them. Then you come back the next day after you tag them or 3 days later, you're going to write them a ticket because they only moved up 3 feet.
Yes, there is that possibility. But the way the process works, being complaint driven, generally the officer or the community service technician has done the investigation to determine whether or not this vehicle actually belongs there or has just been left there.
Okay. So you do have a process to determine whether or not it's
abandoned. It is not a process where we just sticker them and come back and then tag them and tow them. It's a lot more in depth that process is looked at by staff before the vehicle is even towed. Last thing we want to do is tow somebody's vehicle they're going to and from work. And like I said, this is 99% of the time it's complaint based because people don't know who parked it. If they got a new car and they put it on the street. So So yeah, it usually involves us mediating between neighbors and okay. solving the problem.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
One more,
sir?
So Chief, so if my car was to be tagged, I imagine that tag would also have, say, your phone number on it. And if for some reason I've actually been going to work every day, but someone on the block saw my new car and thought it was weird, but every time they wake up, the car is there, then they go to work, then I go after them, and I come back, it doesn't look like it's moved from there. If I was to call you after being tagged and be like, hey, I'm going to work every day, I'm not out of compliance here, would that solve the issue essentially with you?
Yes, it would.
Okay, thank you.
Very good. Any other questions before we go to public comment? Okay. We'll open this now for public comment. If anybody has any, I have no speaker slips, and I see no one rushing to the podium. So, yes, sir, please.
Hello. I had a quick thought, and it is really.
Would you mind just giving us our name for the record? I mean, your name for the record, please.
Oh, sure. My name is CJ V. Hill.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So really, I just had one thought, and it is tied to the for sale sign aspect in cars. So we can't have it on a main thoroughfare. And I agree. I see them on Oak all the time, and people do slow down, me included, just kind of out of habit. People who have driveways, they can park their car in their driveway with their for sale sign, and that's awesome. Lots of folks don't have driveways. So I was thinking, if you have a residential street, you know, 25 or whatever miles an hour, what if you can explore tying the for sale sign in a car aspect to street limits on the street? Obviously, Oak Park, that's a much higher street limit, right? And so that was my only thought on that.
Thank you.
The end.
Anyone else? Okay, we'll go to the phones. Have we any, anyone
no,
on the
no
line?
No one on the line.
No one on the line. Okay. All right, I'll bring it back to council for comments and a motion. So who'd like to start? Anybody?
No comments.
Okay, no? No comments?
Yeah.
Okay. I have one comment, and that is regarding the for sale sign. I, too, when I was going down or up Oak Park the other day, there were two cars for sale. One of them I thought was very pretty. I slowed down, and I thought, this is really ridiculous. You know, I mean, people are putting on their brakes behind me. So I really do understand why that is, why that's part of this ordinance. I believe that 24 hours on the road, on the street, is, I think, probably good enough. There's Craigslist. There's many other ways to advertise your car without causing any real cost or anything like that. So I am in support of this item.
I have a comment when you're finished.
Please.
Oh, it's just good. They can still park in private parking lots like churches and restaurants and things with permission, of course.
Yeah, obviously. With permission.
Yeah, those are private property. So if they knew someone, hey, can I park my car at the church? Would you mind for sale? They could do that. Yeah, okay.
Okay, very good. If there are no other comments, I would, we're looking for a motion, please.
All right, let's do this thing. I move that we adopt an ordinance to repeal and replace Chapter 3 of Article 3 Traffic Regulations of the Grover Beach Municipal Code.
I'll second it.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. May we have a roll call vote, please?
May I ask a quick clarification?
Yes.
Do these need to be, this doesn't need to be unanimous, right, to adopt a ordinance change
no.
like this? Just, okay.
Just thank you.
Might
nope.
stick to my
nope.
my one.
Thank you.
Councilmember Rushing.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Robert.
Yes.
Councilmember Weirich.
Yes.
Councilmember Zimmerman.
I'm going to vote no.
Mayor Bright.
Yes. Okay. Thank you very much. We'll move on now to our regular business, which is adoption of a resolution appointing interim public works director and city manager. And I believe that's our human resources officer, Maddox.
No? Actually, Mayor, I'll go ahead okay. and just speak briefly to this item. Thank you. Good evening. As the council is aware, our public works director has been out on medical leave since August. Our existing staff members within the department, namely Gabriel Munoz Morris and Aaron Wigan, have served very ably as acting directors in the last 2 months. Given the continued recovery and rehab that Mr. Ray is undergoing, we do have a need for additional management continuity within the Public Works Department. To that end, I have worked to secure the services of Steve Kahn. Mr. Kahn is here in the audience this evening. He's a former retired Public Works Director from Atascadero in Santa Maria, who has been serving in interim capacities for different communities around the area, most recently, and actually technically still this week, in the city of Rio Grande, where he will wrap up his service there by the end of this week. Pending your action this evening, then he would begin work with us on Monday, working 32 hours a week, roughly, for the next couple of months while we continue to work with Mr. Ray on his return to work and the recovery and rehab that he is doing. This is an item that is required by the council because of CalPERS requirements. Mr. Kahn is a retired annuitant, and so the council must approve this action at the council level on the business agenda per PERS rules. With that, I'd be glad to take any questions and comments.
Thank you very much. Questions?
No questions.
Sounds like an ideal arrangement. Thank you for, I'm glad it all worked out.
No questions.
Then we'll open up to public comment. Seeing none, have we anyone on the line?
No, there's no one on the line.
Okay, thank you very much. Then I'll bring it back to the council for discussion or a motion.
I can make a motion if there's no discussion. Okay. I'll move to adopt the resolution appointing Steve Kahn as interim public works director / city engineer.
Second. Thank you. Very good. We have a motion and a second. May we have a roll call vote, please?
Councilmember Weirich?
Yes.
Councilmember Zimmerman?
Yes.
Councilmember Rushing?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Robert?
Yes.
Mayor Bright?
Yes. Thank you. Okay. And thank you so much and welcome aboard. We'll move on to item 8, street repair update. CIP Project Manager Wiggins. Hello.
Good evening, Mayor Bright and Council. My name is Erin Wiggin, and this is the street repair update for you tonight. So one of the major city goals is obviously the street maintenance and complete streets. And your residential streets have been updated with Metro K14 bond funds, the bond that was passed back in 2014. Other city streets are referred to as major streets, so that includes 4th Street, North and South Oak Park Boulevard, El Camino Real, West Grand Avenue, and the Pike. And those construction and maintenance for those streets are usually funded from either the general fund or gas tax funds or LTF funds or potential outside grants. We're approaching our 9th year of street rehab work that's been funded by your Measure K14 bond. As a reminder, it was a $48 million bond, and it was to be spent over a 25-year period. But we've completed maintenance and repair of over 300 city blocks and about 70% complete. So I just want to reiterate that. We're not even 10 years in, and we're 70% complete with those streets. We anticipate completing the remaining projects within the next 7 to 9 years. And we actually, myself and Gabriel Munoz Morris, your senior engineer, presented an education session this summer at the American Public Works Association Expo down in San Diego, just highlighting the success of the Measure K14 program. It's a riveting presentation if you want to watch it, and happy to share. We got a lot of really good feedback and a lot of interest, especially from people at smaller agencies looking to do a similar bond for their agencies. So I wanted to just show kind of a before and what you're doing about it here. So once we're complete with all of our residential streets, the goal is to maintain them at a pavement condition index, or PCI, of 65. And in order to maintain them, it would be about $1.5 million per year. So just backing up, pavement condition index is a rating from 0 to 100. And 65 is in fair condition, and 70 is that threshold that's in good condition. So we want to target in there. We've had some maintenance projects on previous Measure K streets in our CIP, but moving forward, ongoing maintenance will need to be allocated annually in the regular budget in future years. Just putting this in perspective, too, over the last 5 years, on average, the city has spent about $4 million per year on Measure K streets, compared to about only $300,000 on major streets. So all of your Measure K 14 streets are numbered with, they start with 2295, and it's 1 to 24. So construction on 16 will start in November, and includes a few blocks of Front Street, a block or two on North 2nd, a large portion of Saratoga, and then Ramona. And then 17, construction will be underway in the spring. So we're averaging about 1.5 street Measure K street projects per year. We have just about $15 million remaining on your $48 million bond, and we have 10 more projects planned. That does include 16 and 17 that I just mentioned. But as you know, the construction cost index has escalated significantly, like on average about 10 to 15% per year. I think last year alone was about 25% cost increases. And so because of that, because of these significant cost increases, we are now forecasting a shortage of about $2.5 million to $4 million to fully complete all of your Measure K streets. This is assuming that construction costs will level out and that your inflation will be back at the normal, I should say, the 2 to 4%. So we would need to look for additional funding sources to complete the residential streets, whether it's general fund or other funding sources. So we're not looking for immediate action tonight, but we do want to identify this, that there is a long-term funding gap. As I mentioned, so we'll be starting 16 next month, and this is the third program where you've had your sidewalk infill program available. And so with this program, the city funds 50% of sidewalk infill, and the residents fund the other 50%. So before you implemented this cost-sharing program, about 1 to 2 residents on every project would participate or infill sidewalk ahead of the street project, or with the street project, I should say. This project, we have 7 residents that will be infilling sidewalk. On the right is a resident at Ocean View who participated in the cost-sharing program, and so that's a picture of him outside his home. This was from an article where he was featured. They were highlighting the Measure K work. So your sidewalk infill is allocated annually in the CIPs anywhere between $50,000 to $100,000, just depending on the Measure K project that we have planned. Other than that, there's no other sidewalk infill work in the CIP. The city did receive a request from Grover Heights Elementary to relocate their crosswalks, which would require adding curb ramps there. So the estimate for this work is about $25,000, and council could consider adding it at mid-year. For your major street update, again, so Measure K-14 focuses on residential streets. The work on the major streets has been limited just because of lack of funding, but your additional revenues from cannabis and sales tax measure F-20 helped fund South Oak Park Boulevard, which is the photo you see here. And then, as you saw in a consent item earlier, we did put the West Grand Avenue streetscape project from 4th to 8th out to bid. And that project included the center medians, included storm drains, lighting, decorative crosswalks and crosswalk enhancements, and street trees. But we did only receive one bid, and the costs were significantly higher than what we had budgeted. So we do plan to bring that back at the next meeting with some options on how to keep that project moving forward, because there is a great opportunity here for redevelopment with the 2 mixed-use projects that we have going on. The current CIP also includes projects for North 4th, from West Grand Avenue to Ocean View, and then West Grand Avenue from 11th to Oak Park, and then South Oak Park from Mentone to the Pike. But again, based on recent bids, the cost for these 3 projects is, the total increase is expected to be about $1.3 million. So the total for the 3 projects is now about $7.6 million. So the unfunded major streets in the CIP include El Camino, Farrell, the Pike, and South Fourth from Farrell to the city limits. And the estimated costs for these unfunded streets are about $12 million. This shows a similar map to your Measure K 14 streets, but this shows your major streets. And the completed projects are shown in blue. As you can see, there is a small portion on South 4th, and then North Oak Park Boulevard and South Oak Park Boulevard, and then a small portion from West Grand Highway 1 to towards the ocean. Then we also have our future projects, which are allocated in the CIP that I mentioned before. And then the green shows the remaining projects that are not currently funded in the CIP. South 4th Street, south of Highland, is very challenging just given the drainage issues and the condition of the street with the maintenance that's required over there. It's very lightly traveled, and it's been closed since this winter because of the storm damage. So this street, to repair this properly, would involve a complex redesign, and estimates to do this project would be about $5 million. Now, there is a potential opportunity for grant funding if it's looked at as a complete street, meaning ped improvements, bike lanes, street lights, storm drains, and that connectivity to Oceano would really be ripe for grant funding there. But until then, we are recommending that this section remain closed until a permanent solution can be identified over there. So I wanted to summarize everything here. So we wanted to provide an update on our Measure K14 streets and the major streets. We also wanted council to consider a curb ramp project at Grover Heights and consider that at mid-year. And then we're also looking for concurrence to keep South 4th Street from Highland to the city limits closed until we can identify a permanent solution. So again, there aren't any immediate fiscal impacts right now, but council should be aware of the construction costs and the impacts to your Measure K14 program and your major streets. And with that, are there any questions?
Very good. Thank you. That was a very comprehensive report. I appreciate it very much. I'll start to my right. Any questions?
No questions.
Oh, and these are just clarification on the major streets, since I could assume someone would ask me. So the adjacent parts for the city on the Pike, that's all considered within city limits too. I know some people might go, "Is that Oceano's? You know, the unincorporated stuff?" But that's all city for our purposes, correct?
The street, yes.
Yep. Okay, perfect. And same with El Camino. Obviously, that's all within our part too. No, it's not someone else's jurisdiction.
Correct. Just the street.
Perfect. Thank you.
I have a question on that, please. So, on the Pike, you're saying that both lanes of that street is city property?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it.
No questions. Thank you.
Could you just clarify which sidewalk we're talking about at Grover Heights Elementary? I went and looked, and there was a couple, and I wasn't sure which one we were specifying there.
Sure. There's a new mobile classroom or new building, and the intent was to shift the crosswalk to better align with the new I don't know if mobile classroom is the correct term, but to better align
flexible
with,
classroom they probably
you.
Say
yes,
these days
yeah.
I don't know,
so to better align with that, I think it was shifting the crosswalk to the north, if I'm remembering correctly.
And just to add to that, I think it's actually on North 8th Street, so it's right across the school from there's a walkway, a sidewalk, where kids will cross. And so the intent of this was to redirect the crosswalk so that the kids are walking right into the campus versus the parking lot, as the crosswalk is going to now.
I got you. Yeah, I can picture which one you're referring to.
And if memory serves there, if I may, the way it's set up currently with kids using that crosswalk at this point, it's in direct conflict with cars that are exiting from the parking lot. So this solution would, in theory, alleviate that issue.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Very
not
good.
A question, I suppose, but thank you.
And I do think that closing South, or keeping South Fourth closed as it is, I went and checked that out as well, and that definitely is pretty much back to sand at this point. So, yeah, and I felt very sad for the one of the few residents who was down there that was having a yard sale the day I went and checked it out. I was like, oh, buddy, they're not going to get a lot of foot traffic, but all the best to you. So that's okay. My thought on that item as well.
Thank you. So we'll open this. I don't have any speaker slips. Anyone in the... Come forward. You can just hand that to staff over there. Right here. Yes, please.
Thank you very much. My name is Kelly Logue. I'm the principal at Grover Heights. And I would like to speak to item number 8, specifically the request to move the sidewalk at Grover Heights. We are a neighborhood school, meaning that we don't have any busing. Most of our students arrive via car or on foot or by bike. And since we do draw from such a small neighborhood area, we have many, many families who arrive on foot. And currently, as Mr. Rushing explained, they cross the one of the main walkways, and it kind of lands them in the parking lot, on the sidewalk near the parking lot, and then they need to cross an exit driveway to get onto campus. So we appreciate any ideas on adjusting that sidewalk in order to make it a safer route to school. And it is a common conversation topic on campus, and we appreciate your support in looking into this. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. Seeing no other in the audience, have we anyone on the line?
No, we have no one on the line.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'll bring it back to the council for any comments.
Nothing more for me. Thanks.
No? No?
No, ma'am.
Okay.
And since we're looking at outside of the update to different direction, we're at Grover Heights Elementary School on that side and South Fourth. And my only comments are for Grover Heights Elementary School. I went there, so I know it hasn't. That part hasn't changed in a long time too. And I know that there's always been a difficulty with getting crossing guards as well, which creates a whole other dynamic because with lack of human intervention. So for this one, I think it's fine for staff to look into it for a mid-year budget review. Obviously, the financial number put in the staff report too, that could change during that time, and there might be further discussions between the city and the school district too that might adjust it. But I think that's perfectly acceptable for the pedestrian accessibility project. And the indefinite closure of South 4th Street, since the $12 million of unfunded projects and this being $5 million of it for an area that isn't heavily residential, and for those stuff who are looking to go between Oceano and Grover Beach, the others, different pathways, and it seems like it's the only unfortunate way to do it is to keep it indefinitely closed. Though I do agree that city staff should pursue different grants to see if they could come up with that funding source, since others would look, as far as the interconnection between that incorporated area and the city, is a different kind of opportunity than outside of what we're looking at as well. So it's something that I do. It's always unfortunate to make this kind of decision, but I think since we haven't had too many issues since it's been closed already, it's something at least we know what the status quo is, and it's not extremely detrimental to the people who are there. They've figured a way as well, but hopefully we will get it open one day. But that obviously outside of our ability tonight.
Thank you. Thank you. Concur. Okay. I agree. We have had some concerns from residents regarding the Grover Heights streets, people speeding and so on. And I think that it is really our duty to make sure that our children of our city are safe and so on. So I definitely support the idea of moving that crosswalk so it's safer. And also with the South 4th Street, I believe that if we could get a shovel-ready something, there could be a lot of grant funds out there for that. So I appreciate that. So we're looking for a motion, or
I just want to say I absolutely agree with both of you on this item, and the potential that was brought up by Ms. Wiggin about potentially having a complete street project on South 4th is potentially game-changing for the South County. That is a corridor that is ripe for that kind of access. And when you consider how challenging it is for a pedestrian or for a bicycle to traverse that section of Highway 1 to get to Oceano, I think we have a very good standing moving forward for a grant opportunity there. So I look forward to seeing what those next steps are.
Terrific. Very good. All right, then. Anyone prepared to make a motion here?
And Mayor, actually, from staff's perspective, there's no motion that's
direction.
Necessary. We're looking for direction, and we've heard a consensus from the council on both topics, so we will go forward as recommended by staff.
Very good.
And I'll just take a moment and just thank the council for your policy leadership to be at 70% of K-14 streets repaired in less than 10 years. It is an extraordinary feat by your council, previous councils, and the city as a whole. I want to thank staff, Ms. Wiggin, Mr. Ray, countless others in Public Works who have delivered this, our contractors. We have a long way to go, and the needs are still daunting, particularly with the major street needs. But we have achieved what we committed to achieve in bringing Measure K-14 to our community back in 2014. So I'm very proud of that. I'm very proud of the work that our city has done. It really has been truly transformational and gives us a direction for other major improvements from city facilities to our water and wastewater systems to other major infrastructure needs to continue modernizing our city.
Thank you, and I agree. It is, I think, really beneficial that we did accelerate the K-14 construction. Otherwise, we could who knows where we'd be, 50% maybe, and we'd have
a lot more
huge deficits that we'd have to deal with. So, yes, thank you very much.
And I do want to, of course, also thank the voters of Grover Beach for passing Measure K-14. Since if it wasn't for there would be no great work to be done to. And obviously, the wisdoms of councils before me who got us this place, student staff, for filling out the strategies to get us through all that too. Because that is extremely quick, and it's weird. I remember before K-14 project started, it was a different city, it was a different world,
was.
And the conversations were completely different, where nowadays I don't hear people really bring it up, which is amazing from growing up here, where it was always brought up.
No doubt, that used to be the thing, but definitely the residents decided to invest in their community, and it was certainly, I think, it was a good thing all the way around. Okay, so we'll close that issue, and we'll move on to public communications for anything that is not on the agenda. Seeing none from our audience, have we anyone on the line?
No, there's no one on the line.
Thank you very much. We'll move on to council committee reports. And I'm just going to go down the line here. Mayor Pro Tem Robert?
No meetings.
Thank you.
No reports.
Councilmember Rushing?
Thank you. One meeting to report on today from last week, Wednesday, the 4th of October. SLOW Council of Governments met, or SLOCOG. A couple items I just wanted to highlight. During the executive director's report, did call out that last week was Walk to School Day. I thought that was appropriate after our conversation we just had regarding Grover Heights Elementary. But last week, over 50 schools and 6,000 students participated in Walk to School Day. And students who walked or rolled to school were welcomed by school staff and community volunteers with healthy snacks and incentives. So it's a program that it keeps growing every year. Grover Heights does a very good job of that. I see that firsthand every year, although it seems like our kids pretty much walk all the time, every time. So it's a beautiful thing. Also did want to call out that SLOCOG staff is continuing the public information campaign, highlighting the merits of a local sales tax option next year. Their polling consultant suggested April 24 as the next potential option for a poll. We'll have the results after that, and then SLOCOG will have a conversation and bring forward some options to the different city councils throughout for consideration as to whether or not that will become a ballot measure for next year. And lastly, we did have a vote regarding the Road to Zero, or RTZ. SLOCOG does love their acronyms. programs. It's a new regional transportation policy that's focused on eliminating traffic fatalities within the next 30 years. And I know that's a huge thing to say, to eliminate traffic fatalities. But I really liked what they said in their report, that to try and strive for anything less than zero fatalities and serious injuries is a fallacy in judgment to begin with. So as a result, they are starting up, and the SLOCOG Council did approve the creation of a regional safety action plan to develop a public-facing safety dashboard and safety analysis that will look at significantly making differences in evolving our roadway network into a safety mobility network, and including systematic safety analysis of support adaptation. This is just a lot of words. Basically, long and short of it, I'm not going to read this entire thing. Long and short of it is, there is a goal in sight. There's going to be a lot of folks working together on this, essentially identifying not just the most densely populated areas, but where sections throughout our community may actually just be the most dangerous. Even though only 15 people go through there, if there are injuries and fatalities, what can be done to make our streets safer so that in 30 years we're not looking at some of the grim statistics that we do year in and year out. So that is my committee report. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We'll move on now to Councilmember Wyrick.
None of my committees met since our last council meeting, so I have none to report.
Very good. Thank you. Councilmember Zimmerman.
Yes, I have a couple here for you. Actually had a busy week the last time that we met on Monday. I have a couple going back way back when to our chamber mixer that was at the Discovery Center, which was fun. Saw a couple of our fellow members up there. And your fine work was dedicated and enjoyed by
Thank
all
you, sir.
And both of yours. I know Mr. Robert is well very involved up at the Children's Discovery Center was where that chamber mixer was. I liked how they, if you haven't been there, they have a very nice castle in the back that they revamp all the time. Most recently, Machu Picchu was the latest iteration, which I thought was fun, and they had a lot of information about that. A place I've been. Very cool. Let's see what else. I went to the Cal Poly Rodeo at the beach. That's unrelated, but that was a chance happening. That was a unique utilization of our space that I thought was really cool for our committee. I guess that goes under Council Communications, not committee reports. Nonetheless, it's in my notes. Then we're going on down to the South County Chamber business government update that was on Friday of that week. So I believe it was the 29th, if my memory serves correctly. And we got a few different updates there. One was particularly regarding some things going on at the county level. The upcoming county commissioners meeting on October 17th, they're considering rejoining the IMWA.
IWMA.
I had it right the first time.
Integrated Waste Management.
Yes, that one. Exactly. Yeah. So something that will be very good for the county. I think that was something that a different county or a different council opted out of very recently, that now this current seated council is looking at again. So that will be considered on the 17th of this month. And then we heard a little bit about the Bob Jones Trail that they're working on and kind of making up a plan, because there is now one landowner standing in between them and completely linking SLO and Avila. So they're looking at directing staff rather to explore new options to circumvent that situation instead of waiting for them to change their mind. There is also a project that is moving forward called the Welcome Home Project at South Higuera and Prado area, and that is 80 units. They mentioned Grover Beach and Cabins for a Change in particular as a success story and a model for what they're hoping to mimic there at the new deal going on near the Prado unhoused shelter and facilities over there. And then also there's going to be a statewide offshore wind conference taking place at here in SLO County. So you can look for that details through SLO County County Commissioners November 1st. And we did not get a location for that one. What else would I share with that? That's about it for that one. And then I attended the SLOCAL Summit there at the Embassy Suites last Thursday, and that was a chance to hear kind of what SLOCAL, or Visit SLOCAL as they're fully known, kind of our regional tourism enthusiasts are up to. And so we heard a few things from the CEO and then also from a couple of interesting keynote speakers, really fast-paced and dynamic as far as conferences go, especially. A few of our staff were there as well. And so we got to kind of hear, they presented a few different interesting metrics as far as moving the county forward and different ways of looking at why people move here, why do people visit here, kind of how long do they stay, and what influences them or not, and kind of you know, using the most effective channels of communication, social media being a big one, to draw people to this zone and kind of understand also what that's doing to the local community and all that sort of thing. So trying to look at a holistic approach, and that was really the, I think, theme of the entire presentation, especially from Mr. Chuck. And then they also explored the Oceano Dunes study and presented that in a synopsis as well. And then we also heard from his kind of a couple different people on his team as we looked at a few different this past spring took advantage of all the green hills and said they did some amount of thousands of hours of filming so that they could capture various things throughout SoCal, as they would like you to say these days, kind of one of they're pushing is SoCal Crafted, so they're looking for local businesses and things. So if people want to be, if they're local makers, if they're local creatives, they're looking to highlight those things and kind of show what makes SoCal County unique and special. And they're also, their other main kind of theme is Land of, and they have different Land Ofs that highlight different things in our area. One that I thought was pretty interesting is also trying to convey the distance versus time factor. So here in SoCal County, you know, that you can be 20 miles away and it's not going to take you 3 hours of gridlock traffic. You're actually going to probably get there in 20-ish minutes. So that was another one that I thought was kind of a fun tactic for folks that are coming from the big city to hear as far as tourism goes. And then I think that about sums that up. I think something that I kind of took away from that conference was there's hundreds of people in that room, and it kind of surprised me that there was that amount of capacity. And also, you know, I guess I didn't realize what a big business tourism was in this county, and I was kind of aware, but I wasn't fully aware of the scope that was presented at this. So I thought it was really interesting to kind of network with some folks and chat with some different people, everybody from involved in different levels of different cities or private hotel folks or regional social media people or everything like that. So I thought that was all a really good thing to get together. So that went on. I think that's the short version of my notes as well. I came away also glad that our slogan isn't "Come Get Salty," which is Morro Bay's new slogan. So,
is it?
Yeah,
oh my.
All the best to them. And then they also they had one of the folks that they presented was the one of the leaders of Visit California. So they had some state level folks involved, and he mentioned hashtag Travel Responsibly was one they're really pushing. So they said they started that during COVID, but now that they're really running with that on a statewide level for a myriad list of folks not over tours, you know, not over traveling to places or, you know, respecting the local environment or local community or kind of doing that. And they're including that in all of their statewide Visit California messaging now, and Visit SoCal was on board to do the same. So I thought that was a really good takeaway as well. And then it ended with a very strange ChatGPT scenario that I'm not going to summarize. But one last thing I will add is that there is one more chamber mixer going back to the South County coming up on the 25th, right across the street here at Epic Entertainment. Spooky Vibes is promised to be the vibe, if you will. So that's all for me.
Smashing.
Yes.
Thank you. I had a bit of a busy week myself. The Air Pollution Control District, September 27th, Scripps report presentation, they reported that just 14% of blowing matter emitting from dune riding area is dust. The staff and scientific advisory group reported a 31.6% reduction in particulate matter due to mitigation measures in place. The scientific advisory group report on dust emissions will be heard at the November 2nd meeting. On 10/13, the hearing board will receive an update on activities to reduce emissions from the riding area in the stipulated order of abatement that was issued to California State Parks and their off-road motor vehicle division. Also, at that same time, a public workshop of the State Parks and Rec annual work plan, which includes mitigation measures, will be conducted for approval, comments, and and or conditions. On October 4th, the SLO County Sanitation District, the redundancy project secondary clarifier, I'd mentioned that it was damaged once it had been constructed. The update was it has been determined that a potential design error is the cause of the concrete slab failure. The design firm, along with the review team, are working on design plans for removal, replacement, anchoring, and reinforcement of the floor. It's like a 10-inch concrete slab. A completion of this removal and replacement is estimated to be early 2024. At this time, there's no indication that the district will incur any costs for that, for those repairs. And then I attended the South Central Coast Basin-Wide Control Council. Our supervisor, Ortiz Legg, is the rep. I am the alternate. And it is comprised of air districts from San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, and Ventura counties. In the discussion of zero-emission grant fundings that is aimed at private and public sectors in the landscaping equipment arena, there was some really interesting information. Each replacement of gas-powered equipment, like a lawnmower that runs for 1 hour, is equivalent to emissions from driving from L.A. to Las Vegas, or 300 miles. And the use of a gas-powered leaf blower for 1 hour is equivalent to the emissions of driving from L.A. to Denver, or 1,100 miles. I was amazed. And that concludes my reports.
That is amazing.
That is amazing.
Yeah. Who would have ever thunk? Okay. Now we'll move on to council communications. Have we any council communications?
I think I snuck my one in. I just happened upon the beach and I said, oh, this is a really festive thing going on down here. And little did I know, there is full on bleachers and sponsors, and I had never chanced upon it before. I guess it was the third year.
Is it really?
Yeah,
I did not know that.
Use that. So it was a Thursday evening, and the rodeo was out in full force, and it was great. It was a really fun, I think, use of the space.
Cool beans. So,
yeah.
Very cool.
I have nothing further.
Thank you.
Thank you.
To my right?
No, Mayor.
Sure. Always a few things, but
I forgot to tell you what I ate for lunch at the
top three. All right. Well, let's see. So top three. So I'll skip Republican's Cop since those who were there. And then let's see. Actually, an interesting one for the Home Builders Association of the Central Coast. They had their public officials night on Thursday, September 28th, and it's basically had different local government officials, including elected positions, appointed staff, et cetera, there with some of the different local home builders. And one of the things that's really good to note is we have a very good reputation for our city. You know, some people noted that, years ago it used to be very difficult to, work through a process, and that the council took action, city staff are very cooperative. I mean, everything's a lot more smoother now. And, some of the people who have been doing projects in our city right now, too, are saying that, staff's amazing. When it comes to other places, they've always run into difficulties of, they were told this, and it doesn't really happen that way, too, where they're like, nope, Grover Beach is an ideal place and stuff to build in. So that was very positive feedback, too, especially since we're always looking at, obviously, housing, within our city, too. So that was, so I'm glad to see that, like I said, greater minds on previous councils and our staff, had figured out these different ways that, makes that industry, say, yep, you're a place to go to. And of course, they shared that with other builders who had to interact with the city, too. So that was nice to see that reaffirmation. And then State Assemblymember Dawn Addis, she invited different officials on different councils and stuff to her San Luis Obispo County Labor Appreciation Breakfast for a lot of different labor unions. And some of them who were there included SEIU Local 620 that represents many of our city employees, others like the California Nurses Association that represents nurses at Oregon Community Hospital, and different trade unions too. So she did an update on different things related to working families, and I appreciate being invited by her since it was interesting, aspects to hear. And
yeah, I'm sorry I couldn't make it, but
oh, no worries, stuff too. But yeah. But she did note that she was like looking for you. So and then outside the Grange Pancake Breakfast, the Filipino Community Center that was in Grove Beach on this past Sunday, they held
amongst their different members, leadership and team building part. It was a half a day. It was really interesting. They got to know some of their members too, and they're super excited, super innovated, super fun too, and you know, really all about making their activities in our community work very well and always open up to future partnerships with the city too. So it was really nice to do that. And as always, they have a lot of great food they bring too, which I never say no to. But yeah, so those are my top ones. Very and good. The only thing I'll have to say too is I'll be out of town for our next city council meeting since I got it's one of the statewide local government trainings that I'm going to. And since it's I was advised by our city attorney, it doesn't meet the Brown X AB 12449 just clause guidelines too, so I can't participate virtually. So you will have four council members to decide the fate of everything at that night. But I trust you all, though.
Well, we'll try to survive without you, and I hope you have an excellent time. Yep. And I'm sure, learn a lot.
And I'm sure this part of the meeting will go much quicker too.
Yeah. So I just have one council communication, and that is I met with Trent Johnson, chair of the Slo County Tobacco Control Coalition, and Amy Gilman, the program manager for the County of Slo Tobacco Control, to discuss the harms of vaping, particularly to our youth. And I learned another interesting fact. One vape canister can contain the nicotine equivalent to an entire pack of cigarettes. So there's no way of knowing if, you know, you pull a cigarette out and you smoke it. If you have a canister that, you know, these kids are smoking, they don't realize how much nicotine they're actually getting. It was amazing. So that is the end of that. And now we'll move on to city manager reports and comments.
Thank you, Mayor and Council members. Good evening once again. A few quick items from my end. First is last week, Central Coast Blues general manager announced the receipt of an $8 million Prop 1 groundwater grant from the state of California to add to the grant funding already secured for this project. That is really good news and shows the continued viability of this project and how it is being supported actively by the federal and state governments in helping to achieve our goal of half the project funding coming from outside grants and the other half being funded by low-interest loans funded by local ratepayers. We are continuing to seek out additional grant opportunities, including $10 million of additional federal funding next year. We won't know the outcome of that until the middle of next year, but if and when we receive those funds, we'll certainly build that into our financial modeling to be able to lower future rates going forward as we have additional grant money coming in to support this vital project. I want to encourage the community to take a look at centralcoastblue.com, which is a website for the Central Coast Blue Recycled Regional Water Authority, the three-member JPA that we formed last year. You get all the information on the reports, on the information about the project, how it's operating, the different agendas over time, and also the contact information for Jeff English, the general manager, who would be more than happy to talk to any interested party about the project, get the facts about what it is, where it's going, and how it's the most viable, cost-effective project that will provide additional water supply and resiliency for our communities going forward. So centralcoastblue.com is the website, and Mr. English would be more than happy to talk to folks about this critical project. Moving beyond that, building on the comments from Kempner Weirich on the Home Builders meeting, we're pleased to acknowledge that the community is going to see a lot of activity at 401 402 West Grand Avenue here very soon. Last week, the Planning Commission did approve the development at 401 West Grand Avenue, 59 housing units, 7,000 square feet of retail commercial space, four stories, rooftop decks. This is one of the largest projects approved in Grover Beach history for housing in our community. It will really be instrumental and dovetail nicely with a project right across the street at 402 West Grand Avenue approved last year. So you're going to see some activity taking place very soon. You already see construction fencing around the vacant J&J Market building. That building will come down soon, along with other sites, other buildings on that site. And then you'll see the actual construction across the street at 402 West Grand Avenue. We'll see a year and a half, to almost up 2 years of continual construction activity in transforming that gateway intersection in our community. Very exciting to see that, and that's the culmination of all the council's work on improving, increasing, modernizing our development code and really bringing in more housing, more vitality into our main commercial corridor. And lastly, I want to give a shout out to the police department. I see Chief Peters over there. The department was featured last week on the Discovery Channel for It's great investigative work in concert with a murder investigation from 2018, a very sad, somber day in our city. The police department and the DA's office did a fantastic job of using technology tools, both in this community and across the country, in bringing the suspect to justice. And that story was picked up locally, but also picked up by the Discovery Channel and shown nationally as a great example of what local law enforcement resources can do to help protect our community. So I want to commend Chief Peters and the police department for their great work, and this shows what an amazing police department we have in our community supporting community safety. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for that. City Attorney?
Nothing this evening, Mayor.
Nothing this evening. All righty then. Well, then I say we're adjourned. Thank you all for coming. Appreciate your time.